Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, here he is, author of Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, Trump's War, and God, Faith, and Reason, Michael Savage.
The world's greatest minds in science, statecraft, and military matters are wrestling with the problems created by the atom. On this spot, outlined in stone, is a figure representing the average man, regardless of his race or creed. These atomic footprints on the sands of time can never be erased. They point a path which leads to unparalleled progress or unparalleled destruction. Just as in the darkness of the desert morning, when the atomic age was born, atomic power puts the question squarely to mankind.
Well, that was then, and today is the 9th of August in 2018, a day we should never forget, the 9th of August. It was when the second atomic bomb was dropped by this great nation on the great nation of Japan at the end of World War II. Actually, it was to end the war in Pacific, the European theater, so to speak. Some theater was more or less over. Germany had been destroyed. But the Japanese were going to fight to the end. They wouldn't give up. So our president, Truman, made a decision to use this new weapon called the atomic bomb. Now, of course, the atomic bomb of then caused such horrendous destruction, but it was a firecracker compared to what is in the world's arsenals today. A dirty bomb smuggled into this country by an Islamofascist could do more damage than was done to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I know we don't think about these things. We're concerned with a slut in Hollywood and how she slipped on a banana peel and her breast fell out, or about the false issues of climate change, Medicaid for all, or how evil America is, and how wonderful communism really was it not for the United States. But the issue of atomic weapons is a big one, because I woke up today and I saw that Vice President Pence called for a new space force, a sixth branch of the military. And I asked myself, well, as a man who supports the military, and we always have to stay a step ahead of our enemies, and China's on the march, does America really need a space force at this time? Moreover, how do we pay for the space force? The government's already printing money around the clock. We have the largest deficit spending in history. The economy's booming, but what's it built upon? And does America really need a space force? I don't know. I wonder what you think about that. And so I looked into it, because the Nagasaki bombing anniversary is today, and I could ask you a bigger question. Should all nuclear weapons be disassembled on Earth? Now, you can answer it any way you want. It would be a foolish question to even answer, because it would never happen. Who is going to be assured that if we disassembled our nuclear weapons, and even if Russia and China would agree to do so, are you telling me there aren't gangsters who would smuggle fissionable material into the hands of terrorists to set off a nuclear weapon? That's not the answer. We can't eliminate all nuclear weapons, as Obama so dreamily thought we could. In some ways, Obama, as clever and as devious as he was really the Frito of world politics. Now, that's your cue, Clint. I just can't resist playing it. He was the Frito of politics. So let's hear Frito, just to wake them up out there and make sure they're really listening on this summer day across America. Great scene. Everyone knows it. It's a classic scene in the movie business. There are only few movie scenes that everyone knows. Everyone in the world who watched The Godfather knows the Frito scene, and they all ask themselves, who is the Frito of today? I'm not asking you that. I play it for comic relief in a time of grimness, thoughtlessness, and fascism, where the left is on the march to crush all speech they disagree with under the guise of freedom of speech. It is right out of Orwell what the tech companies are doing. That's freedom of speech to tell people they can't express borders, language, and culture because it offends those who don't want borders, hate our language, and destroy our culture? No. So we're in a very strange place. Whether we can turn the tide around is another question. Because one thing is sure, and that is that things always change. All societies always change. And either you change with the times, you get left behind. Now, for those of you out there who can't change, don't want to change, don't want to go along with the program, are not interested in doing things such as the radical Democrats, such as Kamala Harris, is suggesting that any new census does not count whether you're a citizen or not, but whether you're a transgender or not, which is reaching now a point of total absurdity and insanity. Don't ask people whether they're a citizen in a census, but do ask them if they're transgender. That is representative of the thinking of the Democrat Party. A shocker to me. So many of you say we're living in a crazy world. What else is new? We've known it's been crazy a long time. And what you cling to is the Rock of Ages, the Bible. And the rational amongst us say, don't be stupid. How can you believe in a book of fables and fantasy and, you know, who's God, what God? How can a rational person believe in an invisible force that no one has seen in thousands of years? How? Moreover, when you actually go back to what the original Jewish visionaries saw, who they called God, was God a space alien? What is God? Could it be? You have to ask yourself. And we keep hearing every day that we're discovering that there are Earths everywhere. There are galaxies that contain now thousands of Earth-like planets on which there could be life. You say, well, I don't want to think about that. It's a summer day. I want to just go to the sand and feel the heat burn my feet. I just want to swill a couple of beers and have a hot dog or a veggie dog or a veggie this or a veggie that. I just want to swim in the surf. I don't blame you. That's what you should be doing. But I've always been thinking about these questions since I'm a little boy. That's why I wrote God, Faith, and Reason. It goes all the way back to when I was a child. I've always wondered who God was. Where is God? Why doesn't he appear? Why doesn't he show his face? Why, if he's so powerful, is he invisible? Children ask that question. I don't know how you answer children a question like that. We all have our own ways of dealing with it. But when I think back to August 8th, 1945, I was not an adult, I was a little baby. You know, you think, here's a whole city annihilated, Nagasaki, with one bomb. How many thousands of Japanese civilians were killed? But then you look at the ruins and you find out that the Japanese very cleverly had built many of their military manufacturing factories in the midst of heavy civilian populations precisely for the reason that they thought that the Allies would never bomb it with so many civilians around it. It was a different world and a different time with different men leading things. And they knew what war was. They really didn't care about collateral damage. If you had to destroy the enemy, no matter what his tricks were, well, like today they hide in the mosque. Today they hide behind women and children in mosques. They blew the mosque up, that's all. They didn't worry about Wolf Blitzer sitting there with a camera. They wanted to survive, and they knew survival was key to everything. What's the good of not living with your stupid principles, they say. But do we have men like that today? I don't know where they are if we do. Just some thoughts. You know, I'm just throwing things out there. Newsreel of Nagasaki bombing. The issues of today that reflect yesterday. The issue of God. Where is God? Who is this God? Why does God remain invisible? Could God have been a space alien or a space creature? You know, if as a man who has a master's degree in anthropology, another master's degree in another field, and a PhD from the University of California, I got to tell you, I've thought about these questions for so many years, and I'm bringing up the degrees not so much to impress you as to remind you that I've spent a lot of years in extremely isolated primitive islands, not just Fiji. Forget about it. You say Fiji is a popular tourist destination today, which is true. But when I first went there in 1969 to collect plants, it was not a tourist destination for Americans. It was a tourist destination for Australians and New Zealanders. But if you went into the out islands, you were stepping back into another time, incidentally. Not so much anymore. But if you go to Easter Island, you can look it up anywhere on the internet. You've seen the odd stone statues on each Easter Island. How did they get there? Moreover, what do these statues represent? They're not really human form. They're gigantic form of some kind of creatures. How are they built? Who are they built to worship? Or you go to Stonehenge. All of these unanswered questions on planet Earth could lead you to believe that there is intelligent life from other places that have and are visiting us today. But if they're so intelligent, how do they let the unintelligent do what they do on this planet? If these all-powerful, supernatural, or extraterrestrial forces are with us and so powerful that we should fear them, why did they permit such evil to exist on this planet where the innocent suffer and the evil thrive? I don't have an answer to that question. All I do is ask the questions. Maybe you want to answer some of them. If you want to answer them on a summer's day, I mean, it's an attempt to be somewhat philosophical in a world of no philosophy, in a world where all you do is focus on this and that and that and this. I can't tell people what to think about. You know, last night I was scanning the television before I went to sleep. I'm sorry to admit it. I'm getting mad at myself. It's a Turkish drama on Netflix. And I'm into episode 50. I'm embarrassed to tell you because I wake up in the morning and say, idiot, 50 episodes of this crap? You've been watching it. You can't stop. Why? Think what if you took a language and broke it into 50, 45-minute segments, how much you could have learned of that language in those 50 segments you've wasted for this garbage. But I watch it obsessively every night. It's about, I don't know how to describe it. It's in Turkish, and I don't understand a word of Turkish. But I like the characters. I like the settings. I like seeing Istanbul. I like seeing what a production is in a modern Muslim country where there's no curse words, no nudity. It's actually a pleasure to not see nudity or a curse word. There's no rap music in it. It's very interesting to watch, and it's where evil always loses and good always wins. It's like watching an American Western in the 50s to me. I guess that's why I like it. But the fact of the matter is, I watch this in wonderment about the world in which we're all living. The Muslim world is changing. The American world is changing. The Christian world is dying. The Jewish world is changing. And so we live through these times which are changing faster than we want to admit. And we all have to flex and move with it. There's an old saying I learned in high school that I learned this in high school biology. It's very intriguing how they taught us then that the animals that didn't make it in evolution were those who could not adapt and they died. I remember thinking about that, sitting in that classroom, that hot classroom at Jamaica, Queens. You know, I would sit and dream off into space like most kids. And once in a while, I hear something that stuck and got me thinking. Well, that was one of the things that got me thinking, which is that when he said that some animals survived and some died along the evolutionary trails, and those who could adapt survived and those who couldn't adapt died. Do you know that that's true in business? It's true in the media. It's true in animal life. It's true in planetary life. You understand this, or is this too esoteric for you? Is this boring in this age of intellectual zeroness? I mean, we're living in an age where there are no questions asked and no answers given. We're living in an age where we flatlined as a human race mentally. I guess so anyway. I'm not desponding over it. I'm just expressing some ideas here. Now, if you want, I could just play sounds like Frito or Mel Allen and things of that nature and ask you about summer things. I'm not quite in the mood yet to do the old August summer shows at the Hotel Savage. But I will shortly on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I only said that for you, turn it up, because I'm just having fun today. I remember when I first smelled mozzarella cheese, I was in my cousin's house in Pennsylvania, way up in the attic. I used to sleep up there when we went out there. I never heard of pizza before. And they got something down there in the kitchen called pizza. I remember the smell came wafting up the staircase. It smelled like vomit to me. I mean, that was pizza. That was mozzarella cheese in the beginning. It's bland. There's no taste to it anymore. Don't call about the best pizza. I'm not going to take that. I'm just thinking out loud, having a good time. You know, you think of a hot summer day. I was going to go to New York next week for vacation. I said, what, are you crazy? You live in the best place on the planet where you have to sleep under four covers with flannel pajamas at night on the water in San Francisco. You want to go to New York and schwitz in a hotel? Why? you know, you like to ask why. Well, because it's memories. You know, you think back. It's not there anymore. You can't go home again. My mother and father are in a grave. My brother's in a grave. Out in Long Island, an old potato field. It's not there anymore. So you think about it. I think of the men opening up the fire hydrants on Longfellow Avenue in the Bronx. The cops didn't care. They took out a wrench. They all had men had tools in those days. They pulled out a tool. They opened up the fire hydrants. The water poured into the gutter. And we little kids would run around in the water. We didn't know where. It looked to us like a river. Yeah, the water was from the Adirondacks. It smelled good, felt good. And no one got a disease. No one's skin got ruined from the water coming out of the fire hydrant. No one drowned. No one's feelings were hurt because the other kid pushed them down in the water. The mothers laughed, and the kid got up and pushed the other one down. They'd open the hydrants and run in the street. It ran like a stream, and we ran in it bathing suits, if they even had them then. I don't even remember. I think we ran in our underwear. It was a different universe. You need to understand some of this stuff by watching movies from that era. And movies don't even touch it. Like A Bronx Tale doesn't really touch the Bronx tale that I'm telling you about. It captures one vision, one part of it. But I'm talking about the other part, the street part. You have to think of a Sajat Ray film in India to really understand and grasp my background.
Savage.
Field, that ball is going, it is gone. Maris hitting his second homer of the day. And the Yankees, sixth homer.
I know, to me, Mel Allen will always be the voice of New York baseball. That guy had some voice, didn't he? I remember being a little kid walking around with a portable radio. I could just see it, polo shirt, shorts, sneakers, radio glued to my ear on my shoulder, and there was that voice that I came to associate with baseball and summers and New York City itself. You know what I'm saying? In many ways, this show represents something akin to that to many listeners who have come to love it. But all things have a life cycle, and no one knows how long anything will go on or how long anything will last. We don't really know that, do we? Do we really know? Everyone wakes up in the morning and they look in the mirror. They think that they can break a brick today with their hands and they're so powerful. And tomorrow they get a stroke or a heart attack, and they're reduced to rubble. We don't know what comes tomorrow. So in a way, we have to, like, take every day as though it's our last and do the best we can. I look at these newspapers, like the New York Post, which I look at every day, or the Daily News. I do not understand the celebrity worship. I can't understand how a person could get up every morning, look in there, and say, I'm a celebrity. How do I get in the newspaper? This one drops a brassiere. That one takes off a shirt. That one's pants fall down under his behind. That one shows us a tattoo. How do they live with themselves? How does someone say, I'm a celebrity, and then what? Oh, my God. How does a celebrity get up and go to the bathroom? How does a celebrity get up and clear her sinuses? How does a celebrity get up and go down to breakfast? What does she say? I'm a celebrity. I have to eat a certain way. I'm a celebrity. Let me go in the street and make believe I'm really being casual and I hate the paparazzi. I'll make believe I think that they're garbage, but I pray to God they're there. Who can live like that? Celebrities who have met Pope Francis. What a great treat that would be. I would say that the Pope's knowledge of science is on a level of Leon DiCaprio. They both have about the same level of knowledge of science. And there we are. Europeans cope with scorching heat wave. I guess it's hot in the summer in Europe. I've never heard of that before. Never been a heat wave in August in Sicily or in Greece before. It's the first time. We're all learning for the first time that summer is hot. So the news, you know, what's in the news? Nothing. Actually, really, it's not a big news day, so to speak. They make it up. Think of if you're in a news space, like a celebrity. Celebrity has to be a celebrity every day, whether they eat, whatever, they sleep, when they eat. So you wake up today, you're in the news business, they're biting their fingers, what can we report on? Nothing. There's so many outlets now for news, they have to make it up. And you can talk about Republicans did this, the Democrats did that, Giuliani says this, Giuliani said that. That depends upon what he had for dinner last night. So what do we turn to? What do you turn to? Can you keep worrying about politics day and night? Is that all you think about? Is that all talk radio has become is politics? Do I have to tell you that talk radio was never only about politics? Must I remind you that it's devolved into only about politics when it should have been and always was about more than politics? And if I tell you I'm sticking my neck out by daring to move into topics other than the boredom of politics in an August when most normal people want to forget politics. You know, there's no election. They don't care about it. They're not focused on politics. Even the midterms, they may pay attention starting after Labor Day a little bit. That's about it. They pay real attention, you know, when the big elections come up, the presidency, and that's it. The average person, in some ways, wisely pays no attention to politics, incidentally. They'd rather get on with their lives. And yet talk radio has, for some reason, devolved into only politics. Every show, all day long, damn Republican, Republican, damn. Damn Republican, Republican, damn. So, you know, I try to go down my own road because that's the versatility of my thinking. And I have to wonder if you're following where I'm going. And if you want to go with me, or do you want me to only talk about damn Republican? Because I'm not going to do it. See, even if you said yes, I won't do it. I won't do it. I didn't evolve to this stage of existence. And my ancestors didn't survive pogroms, holocausts, tornadoes, fires in order for me to sit here and talk about Democrats and Republicans. So let's go to some callers who also think that they can think. Let's begin with Andrew on KSFO Online. Go ahead, Andrew. What's on your mind?
Hi. You mentioned that the species that survives is the one that is able to adapt. And I wanted to know, what is the justification for deciding which species is worthy of life? And, you know, is it the superior species' fault for not being able to adapt and live to whatever a means of life that species wants to live and also coexisting with the, you know, maybe so-called lower quality species or lower level?
Let me see if I understand what you're asking. You're saying just because a species may die out doesn't mean it was an inferior species. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying, whose fault is it? Is it the superior species' fault for not being able to adapt and live with a lesser species? Or is the lesser species' fault for not being able to adapt?
Well, let's take one species. Let's take humans. Let's take Homo sapiens. Let's look at the species that evolved and died off. You know, something about evolution, right? Do you know any of the names of some of these previous prior species of mankind? You know the names, right?
Yeah, so we're Homo sapiens sapiens, right?
Okay, so before us, there were less evolved derivations of our species, and they didn't make it. Why? Okay. Why did they die off? Well, usually they were killed off. They were driven off their lands. They couldn't get food, so they died off, basically. That's what happens in the evolution of any species. I think what you're asking is, does that mean that they're an inferior species? Isn't that what you're saying?
Well, I'm asking if the superior species is not capable of living with an inferior species, is that their inability to adapt?
What you're saying is the, quote, superior species, is it not adapting by not accepting a so-called inferior species to live, to coexist with?
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's an interesting question. Your mind works in a very interesting way. If you were in a class of mine and we were doing a philosophy discussion today, I would have to say you're an A-plus student. I don't have an answer to that question, but it's a novel way of looking at things. What do you actually do for a living? Are you a man or a child? Sorry. Are you a working man or are you a student? What are you?
I'm a college student.
I thought so. So you're still thinking. You can still think. You haven't yet been reached. You haven't reached the point yet where they've turned you into a practical drone who's being trained to become a professional of some kind, meaning an unthinking worker. So what actually are you thinking of studying? What are you studying?
Engineering.
You have a very rational mind. What kind of engineering?
Well, mostly starting to get into electrochemical, trying to work on battery technology.
Boy, I wish that I knew who your teachers were. They're so lucky to have you in their class. And I'm lucky to have you in the audience. I got to tell you that I have a college student who's so bright as you. who can answer a philosophical question. I want to ask you another question that's generic, and it's not to put you on the spot. Is there any philosophy left in this society, and where is it?
I think ignorance, is strength.
You mean ignorance is not bliss? Ignorance is a strength?
Yeah, ignorance is a strength.
So, in other words, you look around in our society and you see how the average mind is poisoned by the tabloids, by the news, by entertainment, and it can't think. It's made not to think. It's made to be bovine, to walk like a cow, like a sheeple, in other words. Just go along and think it's clever by being like all the other sheep, more or less. So you don't have many friends, do you?
No.
Well, you know what? Look, this is it's a hard question to ask, but the truth is, if you're really smart, you probably will never have friends. You're never going to have many friends if you're a thinking person. Because most people are very uncomfortable thinking. You know that. That you make them nervous when you ask questions. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's true.
Have you discovered that? I mean, if you're like the oddball kid who thinks too much, you're like the bird that gets pecked out of the chicken coop for having different feathers. Well, all I can say is, look, I got to say this to you and everyone listening. I created the Savage Nation a quarter of a century ago. That's a long time. Because of the alienation I was experiencing in this soul dead area called the San Francisco area. I've since met some very decent people with good hearts and good souls. But by and large, San Francisco was the most soulless place I had been on the planet. I had been in villages, and I spent all night with people who I didn't speak a word of their language, and I felt more of a contact with them than I did with the ghouls running around in San Francisco. And that was a long time ago. It reached a point where I couldn't take another minute of it, and I created a show called The Savage Nation to create my own world, in essence, which is what you have joined. In essence, we're on our own world here on this radio show, aren't we?
Yes, sir.
Well, can I send you a book like God, Faith, and Reason or something? Which of my old books, of all my books that you've heard of, which would you like?
Man, just send me all of them.
You're clever. I'm going to send you God, Faith, and Reason. Jim, get the kids. No, thanks, man. Thanks for calling. I love that call. He's a lonely, intelligent, brilliant guy sitting alone. He's got probably a very brilliant career ahead of him and a very lonely life as well. Loneliness is really underrated, by the way. You know, people say they're lonely. It's underrated. It's not overrated. It's underrated. You know, you remember a movie, a book by, it was Alan Cilito, the Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner, which became a movie. Remember that? No one remembers these things because it's a different generation. I make references sometimes to the things that don't exist in your mind. Like I say, a Sajet Ray film, and you don't know exactly. It's not like I'm trying to put myself up or you down, but when I said my background in the Bronx as a kid in New York is close in visuals to a Sajet Ray film, you could look it up and see what I'm talking about. The teeming life of Indians in Calcutta, for example, at that time. Millions of people pouring over each other and lives intermixing. So that was one reference. So, you know, what does that mean? I'm telling you that's the way I saw the world. But now I live in a rather isolated world and quietude. I need quietude more than anything else on the planet, would you be it? Clean air and quietude. So when I think of going to New York next week on a trip, I don't want to go. I don't care what hotel I go to, it'll be wrong. I don't care if I get the suite on the top floor that President Roosevelt slept in. I'll find something wrong with it. I'll get in there, the sheet will be wrong. I'll get in there, there'll be a bed bug. I'll get in there, there'll be something in the refrigerator that shouldn't be in there. No, you know what I'm saying? Why? You know, I learned when I was 18 years old or something. I was 20, I don't know what. When I was 1 in 20. No, I remember going on the ship, the motor vessel Waterman, to Europe. It goes back to my first journal, 1963. I had just graduated college, and I went to Europe for the summer on a ex-troop transport, the motor vessel Waterman. I once told this story. And this thing rolled across the Atlantic. It was a terrible tub. I had the time of my life. All we did was stay up all night smoking marijuana and drinking. I mean, I'm not going to tell you I didn't. I told you that. I was a kid. So we'd party all night, and then we'd try to sleep all day. Then we'd go down to the dining room, and it was a German crew. And I remember they hated us because we were enjoying ourselves, and they weren't. Remember, this wasn't Tulane. I'm talking not 20 years after World War II. I think there was still a lot of resentment. And I had a nice suit with me. I took one suit to Europe. My friends thought I was crazy. Like, why are you taking a suit in your clothing? I said, I don't know. There might be an occasion I need a suit, a nice green suit. So I once wore it to dinner on the ship, and the German waiter poured a bowl of soup over my shoulder down onto the suit. I remember to this day. And I remember in the room, we had four people in the room. One of them was an 85-year-old Dutchman who was blind. So the three of us would go up and do things. The young guys were in the room with him. He would stay in the room all the time. I remember I would go back down and talk to this old guy. And I'd ask him questions like the meaning of life. I was that kind of kid. Like, hey, old man, what is the meaning of life? You know, I was on the road of life trying to figure it out. I don't know what kids think about today. I always had a deeper question than the others. Doesn't mean I was smarter. I was more troubled than they were. That's all. I'll tell you what the old blind Dutchman told me when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Let me tell you about something just quickly. If you take an atom of nitrogen and you bond it with one atom of oxygen, you create nitric oxide, which is a miracle molecule that your own body makes that fuels your cardiovascular health and it keeps you vibrant. But as we age, our bodies need help generating more natural nitric oxide. That's why I recommend Super Beets by Human, because it's harnessed the power of nutrient-enriched beets, and they created a superfood which helps your body make more nitric oxide on its own. The core philosophy of Human is to develop heart-healthy products for your body. One teaspoon of Super Beets daily tends to support your cardiovascular health and blood pressure levels, and it gives you natural energy without the need of a quick caffeine kick or sugar high. We're talking real healthy, natural energy. So call 800-481-0504 or go to SavageLovesBeets.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply of Super Beets. Also free shipping with your first order. Feel the 1 plus 1 equals boom effects of Super Beets by calling 800-481-0504. Well, please go to SavageLovesBeats.com today. So we get back to the summer show, Summer at the Hotel Savage. And for some reason, I opened up with a newsreel, an archival newsreel of the bombing of Nagasaki. And I asked, should all nuclear weapons be removed? Does America need a space force, a sixth branch of the military? Things of that nature. But I want to move it back to the philosophical for a moment. And I'm going to ask a question. We don't really know from where we come. No matter how smart you are, no matter how much of a celebrity you are, no matter how many times you're on Page Six, no matter how many cameras go off every time you sneeze, do you really know the origins of man? You pick up certain literature, like the Divine Comedy, Dante's The Divine Comedy. It's 1,700 years old. The Divine Comedy of Dante Alighieri. What is it? Grand theme of life and experience, life and death. Inferno, Purgatorio, Paradiso. What is it actually? But more than that, who was Dante? We know he was born in Florence, Italy in 1265. But the thing was, are there some human beings who are almost superhuman beings, or not even human beings, in their ability to write things such as Dante's Inferno or Dante's Divine Comedy? I mean, how can you say a human being could write a thing like this? And I often wonder about it. I think every once in a while amongst us, there are some people who are not very special, but maybe not even human.
Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. Now, here he is, author of Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, Trump's War, and God, Faith, and Reason, Michael Savage.
So, President Trump has called for the creation of a U.S. Space Force, a new branch of our military, to fight extraterrestrial warfare and defend us against any space attack on our defense system. It's a good idea, but I don't know how we're going to pay for it. And also, I don't know that the war against Islamofascism is quite over yet, given what's going on behind the scenes and the invasion of this country and the penetration of every aspect of the nation. That hasn't changed yet. That's a war that hasn't yet been won, by the way. So you can think as far as you want into the future, but you got people on this planet who are still living in thousands of years ago, and they still want to destroy you, your way of life, crush your religion, blow up your church, and kill you and convert you to their insanity. And they're in this country. What do you want me to say? They're not here? Look at what just happened with the guy in the mosque there. I'm supposed to look the other way for fear I'll offend Jack Dorsey on Twitter. It's a news story. Humanity. How is humanity going to survive if we live in such amnesia? A collective amnesia, which is being organized by the tech companies. If you don't think that's collective amnesia, you say it's censorship. In a way, of course it's censorship. But what they're doing to people they don't agree with is a form of, they're trying to create a form of a collective amnesia. So if you say a man is a man and a woman is a woman, you're now some kind of some type of icky person. And if you say that Islamofascism still exists and it wants to destroy us, then you're a racist to them. And you'd think that these intelligent people would understand what's going on the planet, but they don't. You think that just because people are rich, they're smart? You think just because people are lucky, they're smart? You may be mistaken. I've met smart hobos. Some hobos I've met are smarter than some billionaires that I've met in my life. I've met a man in Fiji in a ripped undershirt sitting in a village who was smarter than some of the billionaires I met in my life in terms of connectivity to the universe and the ability to live off nature. You talk about advanced technology. If you live in a village, as I did, and you see people living without electricity and without any of the accoutrements of modern civilization, and they've been living there for thousands of years, and they've been able to create not only a survival culture, not just food, but a culture itself, a whole civilization with its own music, its own art, its own poetry, its own legends. You talk about genius. That's genius as well. We've lost all the contact with that. So we're talking philosophical stuff today. I don't know why. I really don't know why I'm in this state of mind, but it doesn't really matter to me. And I feel I take chances in the August shows because most people's minds are on relaxation mode. Maybe they're more open to it. Most people want to just forget the problems of the world, and they should. It's the summertime, and living is easy kind of thing. So I went to the dentist yesterday, just not directly related. Again, I have this tooth implant that's been going on for 2 years. I know, what? 2 years, it's a lower tooth. It was from eating too much good food in my life. So it's 2 years now. I slowed it down a little bit at one point. I don't go to the dentist during a flu season. I don't go to the dentist in the winter. I know you say, what are you, crazy? No, I didn't get the flu either, and I don't take the flu shot. Thank you. I have my own stupid way of getting through life. No flu shots, no dental offices in the winter. Okay, so that slowed it up. So I go in there yesterday. I had to do a procedure for some kind. Again, every Thursday I'm there till they finally finish this thing. So I have a sense of humor about visiting a doctor or dentist. So I said to him as I'm back with the mouth open, again, how humiliating. Tilted back in a chair with your mouth open with strangers looking in. And I said to him, well, doctor, one thing I got to say is I outlived my teeth. That's the good news. So he laughed. I said, you can say that to all the people who are having their teeth done. And he laughed. You know, he said, there's wisdom in what you said. He said, because our teeth are only evolved to last between 40 and 45 years, which is very interesting. It's probably true when you think about it, because Neolithic man probably didn't last much longer than that. He either died of starvation or deprivation of some kind, killed by a saber-toothed tiger, killed by a neighboring band of thugs that were coming around looking to steal his women and his food, or his wife caught him in a neighboring cave and killed him with an axe. Who knows? Some stone axe. So 40, 45 years tops. So you could look at it the other way the next time you're in a dentist and say, if you're an older person, you know, well, thank God I outlived my teeth, because it could have been the other way around. You could have died at 20 with a mouth full of perfect teeth. I mean, which way do you want it? I remember when I was young, a kid, and we were all, you know, thought we were the greatest people on earth. Teenagers always do. They think they're immortal. So we were like all guys, you know, we think we're great. So I used to say to my friend, if we saw one of our fathers getting bald, we would talk about it. And I remember we would say, do you actually want to live long enough to see yourself become bald, or would you rather die before you became bald? Could you imagine the things that 18, 19-year-old kids talk about? I think we were 17, 16 at the time. And, you know, we would talk about stuff like that. And then I keep referring back to a guy in the crowd. He was the father of one of my best friends at the time, who was a bar owner on the Upper East Side of New York and then known as Yorktown. Now, most of the men in my father's crowd, in the family crowd, were small merchants. None of them were professionals in the sense of no doctors. There were no lawyers. They were the lower class in the sense of education. I didn't say they were stupid. They just didn't have the higher education, so they made a good living as best they could. Well, this guy was different than all of them. He was a street fighter from New York. He was what would be a bare-knuckle fighter today. He was as tough as nails. And he owned a bar, and he was a gambler. We loved him. The kids naturally gravitate to the tough men. You do know that. Boys always gravitate to the strongest man in the crowd. It's been true from the beginning of time. Boys like tough men, and we want to learn from them because we get energy from them. So he would tell us stories about fighting, and he wouldn't encourage it, but he would always say, never back down. He said, just remember, he said, the worst that could happen to you is you get a broken tooth, so what? Now, that was in a time when things ended that way, but they don't end that way today. You got people today who have no respect for human life. They may as well not be humans. They'd just as soon shotgun you now in the Bronx as see a fly go by in front of their eyes. They have no respect for themselves, so how could they have any respect for human life? But I'm talking about, again, another time in the world where there was honor, there was dignity, there was pride based upon reality in life. And it doesn't have to be through fisticuffs. It could be through intellectual creations as well and standing up for them. It could be standing up to forces that are beyond you think, but they're not beyond you if you think. So we're just talking, that's all. We're just rapping here. We're just having a rap show on the Savage Nation. Let's take some callers. KVOR. Up in the mountains of Colorado. I love KVOR because I know it's near the Air Force Academy. Up in Colorado Springs is where it is. Line 4, KVOR. What's on your mind, Steve?
Hey, you're a breath of fresh air, Dr. Savage. I've been listening to you for a number of years, and you have just the right balance of politics and philosophy. I really like it.
Yes, but here is the question. Am I with the times, or should I only talk about Democrat and Republican?
No, you're with the times.
If someone said, here's $1 million a day to do that, I would quit.
Yeah, I know.
If they say, here's $1 million a show, just talk about Democrats and Republicans like everyone else, I'd say I'm leaving the business. I wouldn't do it.
No, you have too much to offer besides that.
I appreciate it. Well, now, you live up in the mountains up there. Are you in the Air Force? No?
Pardon me?
Are you in the Air Force?
No. I was, back during the Vietnam War, but I'm 72, and I'm retiring this month.
Well, what did you do in the Air Force in the Vietnam War?
Oh, I was in crypto.
Okay, so you had a highly intelligent position.
It was, they were watching everybody even back then.
No, an old NSA man up in the mountains.
Well, yeah, I spent my first year out on the end of the Aleutian Islands on Shimia.
Oh, my God. You talk about isolation. You must like isolation.
No, I really don't, but I've chosen it. I started hiking in the mountains when I was 12. I'd grab my backpack, step out my back door into the Roosevelt National Forest, and I'd just go. And then I spent 20 years in Alaska, and a couple of them in cabins out in the middle of nowhere, training dogs for races. And I figured out early on that being alone and lonely are two different things.
Yes.
And I spent the last 23 years working for a chip manufacturer, and I work in the basement alone, feeding chemicals to the machines. And I enjoy people's company. In fact, when I was in a cabin in Alaska, I found I couldn't go without human contact longer than 2 weeks. My dog team rushed 15 miles to a roadhouse just to sit, drink a beer, and watch people.
Yes, totally right. Yeah, right. Man, it's a very interesting question, which is man capable of isolation for any length of time? And how long is that time? It's probably one of the greatest psychic strains there is in the world, which is to isolate a human being and not let him have any contact. So when you put a prisoner in solitary confinement, you're actually subjecting him to some of the worst torture you can subject a human being to.
That is right. We've got Supermax right down the road from us, and I pity those poor suckers that are in there because that's got.
Yeah, why would you put a human being through that kind of? Why would you break their mind like that? How are you going to gain? How are you going to ever rehabilitate someone like that? Number one, and prison's supposed to be rehabilitation, but number two, what are you trying to achieve by breaking a person's mind? I don't understand it.
I don't either. In fact, the origin of penitentiary is penance. Talking about the Divine Comedy. You know, that's the purpose of it all, is rehabilitation. You know, and yet
not torture. Well, I really appreciate callers like you, as isolated and as individualistic and as rare as you are. I'm glad to hear you catch me up there in the mountains, and I thank you so much for increasing the IQ.
Thank you.
Of this show and of talk radio. God, it's so nice to talk to smart people. And that's what the Savage Nation actually was meant to do. It was meant to connect me with like-minded people, at first just politically, but then as we get to know each other, we find out that we overlap in other sentiments as well, not just in political views, but in worldviews, et cetera. And I think that that's what I have created here all of these years through the radio, starting in 1994. It's hard to believe that a quarter of a century has gone by. I don't believe it. You talk about the rapidity of time. It's actually hard to imagine that this show started in 1994. I actually still can't compute what 25 years really means. It doesn't even mean anything to me. In time, it doesn't mean anything. What is time? It's timeless in that sense. Well, I'm running short of time on this show, which is based on time, where every millisecond counts. So let's take a quick commercial break, and I'll be back.
Savage.
It is Savage Nation, and we're not really talking about politics today. I mean, we need a break from it, don't we? Can we take a breather? Rudy said this, Mueller said that, this one said that, that one said this. That can't be all of life. Is that possible? They're not the sun, the moon, and the stars. I mean, there's more in the universe than that. There's literature, there's poetry, there's science, there's art, there's sex, there's rock and roll. You know, can't we talk about the other subjects out there in the world? I will. So let's talk about all the other subjects in the world that I'm talking about. And we're getting very interesting callers. And it ties into the Space Corps that we hear that they're going to create. Sounds good. I mean, it's very advanced, but my own question is, and I'm into advanced technology in the military because I've studied wars ever since I can think, and it seems to me that those with the most advanced technology generally win the war. And that was true. Let's go back to World War II. Who had the most advanced fighter? Who had the most advanced weaponry? Well, it was true up to a point. Then it was reduced to another fact, a factotum, fact rather, which is that which country produced more steel won? That's why Germany lost. They were not producing as much steel as we were. We were a better industrial nation. It's true they had the ME-109. The Brits had the wonderful Spitfire. Then we came along with a more advanced plane, but then the Germans came along with a jet plane, and our fighter pilots didn't know what was flying above them. They could never believe what they were looking at. That became our jet in the 50s. We stole the German technology to create, well, with the German scientists that we brought in here. Smart we didn't kill them all. Wernher von Braun and his team, and they created our first jet propulsion laboratories for us. So those with the most advanced technology generally win wars. Not always, but generally. And I think we need an advanced technology in space, but who's going to pay for it? That's what I'd like to know. Who's going to pay for the Space Corps? It's a basic question. I'd like a lot of things. I don't know if I can afford them. Anyway, it's just one topic. You know what I'm saying? John on WABC, what's your topic? Welcome to the program.
Dr. Savage,
Johnny.
Nice to talk.
Yeah.
You know, This is kind of off topic now, but earlier you were talking about evolution a little bit. And I thought it might be important to say out loud that most people think evolution is a linear process, and it isn't necessarily. It can happen all around us at the same time. And I think, for example, with Homo sapien, I mean, Homo sapien came out of, I believe, the absorption of Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon. And Neanderthal actually had a larger brain than we now have. And I think that's happened.
Right, but hold on now. Why did the Neanderthal die out and the current species survive?
I don't think they died out, as most people popularly think. I think they were...
Okay, you're talking about the basic voter for the Democrats. They're still around.
Yeah, I guess I am. But most people believe... No, the fossil evidence, even the genetic studies, indicate they interbred.
Oh, yeah. Interbreeding has been part of the human condition from the beginning of time. It makes for a more viable offspring. There's no question about it.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. As you know, I have a problem with censorship on all levels, and we're talking about censorship this week because of what happened with Alex Jones. And I'm only one of very few who would dare have him on. All the other great conservatives stabbed him in the back, as they did me when I was stabbed in the back by Britain, the land of the Magna Carta. They weren't there for me. Some weren't, but most of them weren't. But same with Alex. They all ran away from him. And Cheryl Chumley writes for the Washington Times and writes very well indeed. She read a great article about the subject, which I posted on michaelsavage.com, but I don't want to talk about that. She has a new article on Twitter shadow banning, where they say there is no shadow banning, and she talks about Jack Dorsey, who is a brilliant guy who created Twitter. He's the head of payments company Square, blah, blah, blah. And he said that there is no shadow banning. She doesn't believe that, though. So we're going to talk about not only Twitter for the moment, and shadow banning in general by these companies, but also about Cheryl Chumley's interests in artificial intelligence. Cheryl, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, it's such an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Not you. No honor. It's my honor. Honor for me, madam. So, Cheryl,
yep.
you say that Dorsey says there is no shadow banning, but you don't believe him?
No, I don't believe him. Do you? I mean...
I don't know if I'm shadow banned. I have no idea. I'm waiting for the day I go on my site and I'm not there anymore.
Well, I mean, it's not that you would not be there. It's that you would think that you are still there, but you're not. And that's the problem. That's the evil of shadow banning. You think you're happily posting and tweeting away and all your followers are picking up and reading what you're saying. But really, you're just a ghost. Your voice is going out there, and nobody's picking up on your post. And that's
well, it's already happened to me on Facebook. My followers went down by two-thirds about 9 months ago for reasons that I can only imagine, which is the hiring of third-world losers, which is why these companies hire third-world losers who come from despotic nations which have no First Amendment. And so they're very happy to comply with the dictatorships of these companies.
And then, even more to that point, these dictatorships of these companies, they turn around and hire snowflake millennials who think there's such a thing in America as hate speech.
Well, as I have said, the First Amendment was written to protect offensive speech, not polite speech. I guess they didn't learn that in tech school in Pakistan.
So, no, they don't teach that in college.
You know, they don't teach that in Pakistan. And why these companies are so anxious to hire these H-1B visa people is very obvious. Not only do they work for less money, but they're easily manipulated to disobey the laws of the land and follow the dictates of the dictatorship company that they work for. So what's the solution? Can the government step in and force them to comply with FCC rules?
Well, you know what? There's been a lot of talk lately about the government coming in and regulating, and I've been a little bit hesitant to jump on that ship. Partly
right.
Because I love the free market, and I think there's a whole trail you could go down of unintended consequences where it's going to come back to bite conservatives in the butt. And the other thing is, if you look at it, who's talking most about regulating the Internet? It's George Soros. It's the far left. It's the progressives and globalists. So why should conservatives give them what they want?
Well, of course. So you say it's a whole game they're playing to herd us into accepting regulation.
I think so. You know, I'm not a far-out conspiracy theorist, but you only have to do a little bit of research and see that these same people are on record calling for regulation of the Internet, and they're the ones favoring these types of censorship on social media. And my latest post at the Washington Times today, I suggested perhaps we should take a different route. Perhaps we should change the battlefield as conservatives and maybe change the Title VII Civil Rights Act to include political beliefs. That kind of leaves it in the free market area. I know this is an employer-employee relationship, the Title VII laws, what they govern, but at least it gets it codified. It gets it written in U.S. law that political belief is protected just like somebody's skin color.
So you're saying what? What do you want to do with Title VII?
Take Title VII and have Congress amend it to add to the list of things that you're not allowed to discriminate against, add to gender, disability, and so forth. Add a phrase called political belief.
Ah.
What that means is the private market now cannot discriminate. They can't fire employees for their political beliefs. That does nothing for the customers, the consumers of these social media sites. But I believe that once they start down this path of understanding that political belief is protected, same as somebody's skin color, that it won't be long before those provisions are extended by these social media giants to their customers and clients as well.
So in other words, let's say I post something on Facebook and my political opinion is conservative and they don't like it and they take it down. That would be as though I'm a minority and they took me down because of my skin color.
Right. If the way it would work, Title VII, basically, if you were an employee of Twitter and you felt because, hey, my political views as Michael Savage, I'm being discriminated against, you could sue in court under what I'm proposing to add political beliefs to that list. And
wow.
that would be the start. After that, after tech companies get used to it for a while and the American public starts accepting that political beliefs are protected under Title VII, then these same companies would probably extend those provisions to just users, to just those who post on their sites.
Is this your idea? Cheryl Chumley of the Washington Times, is this your original idea?
I didn't take it from anybody. I was just mulling it over the last...
No, I didn't say you did. I'm saying it's so unique. I have to ask. I haven't read it anywhere. This is brilliant.
Yeah, this is... I just thought of it. I just posted it today. People can take a look. I can't stand, Michael, the idea of conservatives talking about government regulating the free market. It just drives me nuts.
So you're saying regulating the free market is a leftist talking point, not a conservative one, and calling for crackdowns on social media plays right into the left's hands, so that's the game they're playing. They're two steps ahead of us. Especially George Soros having a document calling for regulating internet to favor open society supporters. So therefore, you're saying there's a better plan. And the better plan is add Title VII protections to social media.
Make it political belief.
Title VII of the Civil Rights Act prohibits employers from discriminating based on race, color, religion, sex, national origin. You're saying now add political belief.
Yes.
Brilliant. You should get a Pulitzer, a Nobel Prize for this.
That's very kind of you. I just, doesn't that drive you nuts, though, the idea of conservatives calling for what Democrats want, regulation?
No, because it's hard to figure it out. You're smarter than most of us. You should present this idea to the president. He would love it. My opinion is that President Trump would understand this right away. How do you add to the Civil Rights Act? That'd have to go through Congress, wouldn't it?
I believe it would.
You're talking about a very difficult situation, aren't you, Cheryl?
Yeah, but I mean, if we don't talk about something different, I'm telling you, within the next couple of years, don't you see internet regulation being a reality? I mean, we need to bring different ideas to the forefront instead of just caving to what the globalists and the progressives want.
Mm. I like it. It's pretty self-explanatory what you're saying, and it makes common sense, and I think it would add to the legal protections that most of us have. And why should we of a political orientation be discriminated against in a way that others aren't?
Well, I think you would benefit greatly. I mean,
I sure would. I would have a real protection that I currently don't have.
That's right.
Well, so... the chance of Congress passing this, though, right now, with the spinelessness of the Republicans and the deviousness of the Democrats, how likely could that happen?
Oh yeah. I mean, you hit the nil on the head. It's nil to zero on that.
All right, let's move on to another brilliant idea from Cheryl K. Chumley of the Washington Times, my favorite journalist in America. Cheryl, what do you have to say about artificial intelligence? I know it's one of the topics you're interested in.
I've been covering this at length since January, and I have to say this is probably one of the most underreported issues in the mainstream or conservative media. Everything you hear about artificial intelligence is how great it is, but you look beyond that cloak, and I mean, there are so many constitutional things. There are things that strip your God-given rights. There are wacko things where they want to make robots equal, have constitutional protections equal to that of citizens.
Wait a minute. You're making me laugh because years ago I did a parody on clone rights, which I've got to find. Clint, find that one for later, where the clones act up and demand equal rights to human beings and they go on strike. It was a parody I did a number of years ago. It's very funny.
Well, you're prophetic there. Cause that's
clones are us. Clones are us. Clones are us. And they go out and they riot in the streets the way the left is doing now. It's a very funny piece. So you're afraid that they actually could take over our society, the robots?
I'm outraged that this is where it's headed. I mean, there's a whole movement out there in the scientific world which is completely secular. And they think that robots can be brought into existence equal to humans. And they actually think there's going to come a time where artificial intelligence, machine learning, surpasses that of humans. And it's basically going to come in the next few years. And that's going to leave humans basically paying, you know, worshiping robots and worshiping artificial intelligence, looking to machines for all the answers.
But Cheryl, when you have, and I'm not trying to jump cut to a salacious topic, when you have sex robots already replacing women in some societies, how far are we away from robots running the world?
Well, that is one of those topics that never makes the news. But I've been reading in Japan, they have a real concern about robots replacing humans there because apparently there's so many men that want to have sex with robots instead of women. They're going to have a birth rate issue in the coming generations. And the problem is that...
But Cheryl, already Japan has one of the lowest birth rates in the world for a number of reasons. And I can't put my finger on which one is the most prominent or dominant, but the Japanese birth rate is one of the lowest in the world.
Well, it's on track to get lower. And, you know, I know this stuff sounds a little bit wacky to people who aren't used to reading about robots and artificial intelligence and everything, but I've been reading this stuff every day since January and reporting on it, and there's a lot of alarming stuff coming out of this field.
Well, that's why every time I go to the dentist, I'm glad to find that I'm still human because it does hurt when he does work on my gums. Cheryl Chumley of the Washington Times, stay with us. We'll continue to talk with our audience here on the Savage Nation about these topics. They're great. Back in a minute.
Savage.
Look, it's summertime. Many of you are on the road, all right? What if your car breaks down? What if you take your car in for a simple oil change and the mechanic says, uh-oh, something wrong? So you hit with a repair bill. It's happened to every one of us. Well, when you have extended vehicle protection from CarShield, you're not going to worry about those unexpected surprises. What if you have to replace your engine? Thousands and thousands of dollars. A sensor today is over $1,000. But CarShield makes the process of fixing your car for a covered repair very easy. You can have your favorite mechanic or even a dealership do the work, and they'll pay them directly. It's your choice. And CarShield gives you 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is being fixed. It's a great deal. So pay attention. If your car has 5,000 to 150,000 miles, it doesn't mean you have to pay high repair bills. CarShield administrators have paid out close to $2 billion in claims, and they're ready to help you. So save yourself thousands in future car repairs. Get covered by the ultimate and extended vehicle protection. Just call 800-CAR-6100 and mention code SAVAGE. 800-CAR-6100, code SAVAGE. Visit CarShield.com. Use code SAVAGE to save 10%. That's carshield.com, code SAVAGE, or call 800-CAR-6100. But you must mention code SAVAGE. A deductible may apply. We return to Cheryl Chumley, line 10, on the Savage Nation. Tell us more about AI. What's going on in the world now? How is it going to hit us first, Cheryl? I mean, we know about the sex robots, which is bad enough because the birth rate's plummeting in countries where sex robots have become dominant, such as in Japan. What's next to follow?
the worst thing right now is the surveillance. Instead of just mounting cameras and so forth and police cruisers driving around with cameras, police are starting to use things like predictive technology where they actually try and predict where crime's going to occur. And if that's not bad enough, respond before even crimes occur. Another thing which is terrible for every American is what's going on in healthcare. The good thing is when you collect people's medical records, the data collection, it's used to come up with medical treatments, medical procedures that use artificial intelligence to make people's health better. But the bad news is it relies on so much personal medical data that yours and mine and every American's private medical record, something that we hold dear, that's going to be a thing of the past because the medical community says that they need this data in order to make medical gains. Those are two areas right there.
So we're entering not a brave new world, but a very frightening new world with artificial intelligence. But you and I both know this is not going to stop, is it?
No, it's not. It's definitely not, Michael. And you know what? You're already feeling the repercussions because artificial intelligence is used so frequently in these social media sites, which is then used to justify booting people like Michael Savage from social media sites.
And most politicians can use some artificial intelligence since they lack native intelligence. We're going to have to end it on that. Cheryl Chumley, the best writer in America. I read all of her columns. I link them on michaelsavage.com, and I mean it. She's a first-class human being and a really brilliant person. And your idea to add political orientation to Title VII protections is probably the best idea I've heard all year. Honestly, Cheryl, it's really a brilliant idea, and I laud it. I think it should go right to the White House. I sincerely do. I think it's a great idea.
Thank you so much.
Cheryl Chumley, Washington Times, never miss a column. I'll be back. Be here or be nowhere. This is The Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, a host like no others.